You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Astonishing Legends Network.
The views and opinions expressed by hosts and listeners on the Astonishing Dead Letter Office are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of Astonishing Legends Productions, the Astonishing Legends Network, or any affiliated entities or guests.
When something unexplainable happens to you, it can make you feel isolated or alone. But trust us, you're not. For over a decade, you've been sending your strange stories to Astonishing Legends. And now it's time for our fellow Legenders to hear them too. Join us weekly in the vault beneath Blanket Fortiana, which we call the Astonishing Dead Letter Office.
Tonight's episode, The Ichtyonaut.
Well, tonight's story comes to us from Christopher Maines. He sent it to us all the way back in 2019, and we are thrilled to be able to share it on the Dead Letter Office tonight. Mr. Maines lives in the remote landscapes of Alaska, where mysteries are as vast as the wilderness itself, and his story is a chilling tale that connects two legendary phenomena. One, the Astonishing Legends listeners will know well, the Mothman, and another they might not know so well. The Ichtyonaut.
Oh, very cool. Well, since there's some background information here, as well as the story, why don't you tell us about the background info, and then I'll read the story.
All right, I'll start out here. I am a new listener, having stumbled across your podcast a few days ago, looking for something out of the ordinary, and just finished parts 1, 2, 3, and 4A of your Mothman piece. My first episodes I listened to were about Dyatlov Pass, and some things intrigued me on that subject as well. But it wasn't until I listened to your podcast and heard some information that perked my ears where I began to connect the two together and some local encounters. I live in a remote town called Dillingham, Alaska, which is nestled on the Nushagak River near the towns of Togiak and Manicotic, which to my surprise, you mentioned on episode 4A of Mothman. I also remember those bird sightings in 2002, but that isn't the reason I'm writing you. It does add a bit of synchronicity, though, to what I am about to write. In the Yupik culture, there is a being called the Ichtyonaut, and it means extraordinary person. Wikipedia claims that it also means little person, but that is a mistake, as a little person in Yupik culture is something entirely different. The reason I bring up the Ichtyonaut is based on certain things described in encounters with the Mothman and some of the strange events around the Dyatlov Pass tragedy. I have actually been studying the subject on Ichtyonaut for the past few months, looking up written accounts from the 1800s, talking to Yupik elders, researching oral history accounts and Yupik legends. At times during my interviews with people, they either wished to not speak too much on the subject as they appear afraid, or they warned me from continuing my efforts, imploring me to abandon my pursuit and leave it alone. But I'm far too curious and can't help myself. The subject is too fascinating. Now, on to the similarities. First, the appearance changes, or changes depending on who's looking. Sometimes it appears human and dons a garment, much like the people of the time, like a parka, and it can change its form into an animal, usually taking the form of a large black raven. Two, weird lights in the sky. The Ichtyonaut are also said to appear as dancing lights in the sky above mountains. Children are told not to focus on the light, as it will get closer and closer, and it seems to keep the individual in a trance-like state. And then he puts this in quotes, actually. A silent ball of light that appeared to move so fast, it was in two places at the same time, end quote. This also relates to the weird lights around the mountains of Dyatlov's Pass. 3. Appearing to women during menstruation. This one really jumped out at me when listening to your podcast. I had never heard of that detail in the Mothman encounters, but Ikchanot are said to appear more frequently to women who are menstruating or having suffered a miscarriage. 4. Weird physical trauma. It is said that the Ikchanot would attack you with invisible weapons, and the wounds that were inflicted you would not feel for days, weeks, or sometimes months. This was another strange detail I ran into. This may also explain some of the strange wounds found on the hikers of Dyatlov Pass. And then 5, the dread or fear zone. It is said that encountering the areas where these beings reside causes people to experience fear, dread, sickness, and unease. I frequent an area called Snake Lake, nestled between several mountains. This area is where these Ikchanot have been historically seen. And before knowing about these side effects, I always experienced fear, nausea, and the feeling I wasn't supposed to be there. I later learned that I was not alone, and others experienced the same phenomena, claiming it creeped them out or made them uneasy. All right, so that's the setup on the research, those 5 points, which we'll talk more about after the actual story here.
Yeah, there's a lot in common there, it seems, with multiple phenomena that we've covered over the years, and I want to talk more about that, but first, let's hear Christopher's recounting of the events he's connected to this legend.
Yeah, this is fascinating stuff. And Forrest, I already took all the difficult Inupiat words, so I think you got it easier.
Right. Well, thank you so much for that, sir. Much appreciated. And we try to find YouTube clips at least that have a native speaker pronouncing them. But sometimes it's hard because there is no native speaker or the language is dead. So we do our best. Anyway, on to the story as written. The reason I got into researching things like the Ikchanot is because of experiences I've had in the past, but I will only touch on one incident as I believe it relates to the same type of phenomena as the Mothman. It was the summer of 2013, and it all started with a single death. A young woman died in a tragic car accident. And these types of things may be common in other places or cities, but we are a small community of 2,200, and these things are very uncommon in Dillingham, especially automobile accidents. It struck me, as I had just talked to her 2 days before the crash. She was only 2 years older than me and was a very nice woman. We have a saying in our rural communities that death comes in threes out here, so it didn't take long until a second person died. And then an elderly man went missing. We searched for a week, but his body was found washed up on shore. This was only the beginning. Over the course of the summer and fall, 15 people died, and people began to worry they or someone they loved would be next. One of them was my boss at the time's oldest son, who also died in a car crash, and each one I had spoken to or interacted with a day or two before they died. Again, I know people die every day, but in a small town, this was very unusual and too frequent. The reason I think this is related to the same phenomena as the Mothman is that during this time, I started having experiences that were highly unusual. I started to see a shadowy figure hanging out around my office. I would be walking to the kitchen and I would spot a pair of legs from the window. Our building was located on a slope near the UAF Bristol Bay campus, so I couldn't see the whole person, but when I would walk to the window to see who it was, they would be gone. Another time, I was in the front and saw a person in all black walk behind my car, but they didn't emerge from the other side. So I walked out of the building thinking they were doing something to my car, but when I circled to the back, there wasn't anyone there. If this weren't strange enough, I was also getting weird phone calls at work and on my cell phone. It was always an unknown number, and when I would pick up, it was like static, and there would be a strange humming and at times rattling. At first, I thought it was interference or a prank, but I ended up switching my cell phone number and didn't even tell anyone but my wife what the new number was, but to no avail, it kept happening. Then that October, I saw the lights for the first time. My wife and I lived in an apartment complex at the time, and it faced the Nushagak River. For 3 mornings in a row, around 6:30 a.m.,
I began to see a ball of light across the river. It would dance around and plunge into the water, resurface and enter the trees and back and forth. It didn't make a sound. I would stand there fixated, wondering what it was, but at the time, I couldn't explain it. By December, the occurrences stopped. But still, death comes in threes in this area, and whenever one occurs, we all begin to ask ourselves, who will be next? We already had two this year, and as of last week, a third. A woman I had known for many years passed away in her sleep at the young age of 50. I've always been skeptical of fantastic stories and phenomena. Even though I have had many strange encounters and experiences, I rarely share them with anyone out of fear of being labeled as a crazy person. I usually take other stories with a grain of salt and look for a rational explanation instead. But as I've gotten older, my views are starting to change, and the truth is so much stranger than fiction. Again, I only share this information because of the similarities between the Mothman and the Ikhjanat, as well as the similarities between Dyatlov Pass lights and the mysterious deaths and tragedy of those 9 hikers, possibly attributed to this fear zone or a sighting of these creatures, or stumbling into or near one of these mysterious doors. Lastly, a little background on myself. I am 33 years old, I have a BA and MA in anthropology, and I'm working on my PhD. I've served in the Dillingham City Council for 7 years, chairman of the Code Committee, and have worked with the Bristol Bay Native Association since 2009. So I consider myself an educated and level-headed individual.
Okay, a couple of things about this. First, I want to remind everyone, he sent this to us in 2019, so he's now 38.
Okay. Figure everybody you hear in these stories is a few years
older.
He has
aged a little bit, yeah. And then the other thing that's interesting to me about him is, you know, we always contact folks about how much of your name can we use in this. You'll hear this in the closing credits when we talk about how to send in a submission of your own. But he was like, yeah, you can go ahead and use my whole name. I'm fine with it. And I thought that was interesting too, because he's actually at a senior level in government there. He's held positions in all different parts of it. And he's fine with coming out and talking about this stuff, which I thought was admirable.
Yes, absolutely.
Some interesting things about this. I guess that in the Yupik culture, the Ikhjanat means extraordinary person. That's what he said at the beginning of his letter, which I thought was fascinating. I think extraordinary in that case is maybe a lost in translation term for someone that has abilities beyond the normal mortal man. And a lot of things that I thought about when I thought about that and the connections that he's drawing between Dyatlov Pass and the Mothman, there also was a lot of stuff in his letter that reminded me of the happenings at Skinwalker Ranch.
Oh, yeah.
Now, in the course of trying to learn how to properly pronounce Ikhjanat, and which he, by the way, to his credit, and thank you, Christopher, had put in a phonetic spelling for us when he sent it to us, I went on one of the days when you were talking earlier. It was interesting because you were talking earlier about us trying to find somebody on video pronouncing it correctly. And it took me like 45 minutes, but I found this clip of these authors that had collaborated and written a book about the Ikhjanat. And there were 3 people on a panel, these 2 women and a local Inupiat man who I think was also a historian. And he was telling stories about them. And this was like a 2-hour panel. And I went like 35 minutes into it before I got to him saying the word Ikhjanat. Oh, as he was sitting there, he's saying just a few weeks ago, people are still seeing them to this day. And of course, this panel was a few years ago, but not that long. And he described folks that were out in some area where they were supposed to be doing environmental cleanup or something. And they saw 2 very small women approaching them dressed in fur, like fur, old time fur coats that were had been made from pelts. And when the folks came back from going out to that area where they had been doing the cleaning, the elders were like, you saw the Ikhjanat. It's like these 2 old women that were out of place out there in the middle of nowhere, sort of approaching them. And this gentleman, who's the historian, and I gather an elder, Inupiat himself, kind of laughed and said they would never go back to that area alone again.
Yeah.
So there was something about that. So it's still happening. And there's just these ideas of shape-shifting and things like that. It's fascinating to me. And then the whole thing about children being told not to focus on this light that puts them in a trance, which is something we've heard about the orbs, like at Skinwalker Ranch, and orbs in general. And then that plays back into folklore, the whole idea of, you know, vampires being able to hypnotize you in this, you know, you're going to sit here, or the Pukwudgies like leading you out, come with me, everything's going to be okay, you're in a trance, and they lead you to your doom. It's interesting how all these things are intertwined, but these folks clearly very much believe in this still happening. So I thought that was really interesting. And then the other thing, when he was talking about more eyewitnesses that were women specifically, and also women who were experiencing menstruation or had recently had a miscarriage, I was like, I don't remember saying that in the Mothman series. So I went back to our transcripts, and it tied back to that story about the Bloodmobile that was attacked by the UFO in March of 1967. I did look this up. That we mentioned that is in John Keel's book, The Mothman Prophecies. He talks about this Bloodmobile that had a full van full of blood, I guess, and was being chased by a UFO. It's an unbelievable story. I had mistakenly thought that was connected to Gray Barker, who was known to exaggerate things, but this was a Keel story, as best I can tell. And it took place in the months preceding all the Mothman sightings, the crux of them in the Silver Bridge collapse. And Gray Barker is another author, for people who aren't familiar with our Mothman series, or the story of the Mothman. That is an author who was working at the same time as John Keel, and his writings were a little bit more fantastic. But one of the things that Keel said that he had noted in his investigations of the Mothman sightings was that specifically more women saw it than men. And also he seemed to make some kind of connection between whether or not they were, I guess, recently had menstruated or something. So who knows? You know, it was the 1960s, and that might have been not a truly scientific observation. But what's interesting to me is that Mr. Maines is saying that is a known idea in terms of connection with the Ichnaught in our culture and community here. I thought that was fascinating.
Yeah, there's a lot of fascinating tie-ins that Christopher mentions here. And as we've done the show since Dyatlov, certainly, you know, that's all we can do here is start to make connections and patterns visible and try and rationalize what these connections mean, if anything. And since then, we've gotten a bit more information and a little bit of knowledge, although no more answers. But a couple things stuck out to me. One, as far as the balls of light are concerned and Dyatlov, do you remember when we did the episode 136 of our Dyatlov update number one, and we had author Keith McCloskey on to talk about his book, Mountain of the Dead, the Dyatlov Pass Incident and Journey to Dyatlov Pass, An Explanation of the Mystery. And he's done a ton of research going to Russia and looking at original artifacts that are left over. And one thing I had him confirm is that, because of course you see a lot of evidence online, you can't really trust it or you don't know what's real and what's been put up there. But this was confirmed by Keith as being genuine. And the last frame of film taken on the roll that was discovered in the camera from one of the hikers was a out-of-focus ball of light off in the distance.
That's right. I remember the picture.
And and here's how our thinking has changed. So I just confirmed with him, hey, is that really the last frame on that roll of film that was exposed? He said, yes, that is genuine. I saw the strip of negative 35 millimeter taken, and that out of focus ball of light is the last shot taken. Now, you could say like, well, it was a helicopter or something, and maybe, but keep in mind, folks, there was no one else, or not supposed to be anybody else, any other human around for miles. Now, you have the local indigenous people there, but they would say they weren't out there as well. So there's really no practical reason for that ball of light being in the sky off in the distance. Yeah. And then you wonder, well, it was significant enough for one of the hikers to hurriedly take that shot. Something was happening, and it had something to do with that ball of light in the sky. Now, whether that was an explosion, we don't know.
Or yeah, could some have been people tied thought it might be a military exercise. Yeah.
Right. But of course, and of course, the military denies they were out there to avoid any blame. But we had thought maybe there was some military doings up there. But over the years, I've adjusted my thinking to believe that it could be a combination of things. Maybe you had a military exercise. Maybe you had some kind of phenomenon, you know, monitoring that exercise, or the phenomenon alone itself was up there. But it kind of ties in with those mysterious balls of light and a little bit to what he's saying here, Christopher. So that's the first odd thing. The other thing is that this story, of course, reminds me of a series I just watched recently, at least season one. I don't know if you've seen this, Scott, but it's called Alaskan Killer Bigfoot.
No.
Really entertaining, frightening. Okay. It delivers. And so that series premiered on a Discovery Plus December 7th, 2021. But you'll know this name. It basically features a group of five men that go to, and it's a reality show, folks. Yes, it's a cable, spooky, paranormal show. But these are real guys, locals, who travel back to the abandoned town of Portlock, Alaska. Tessa's written a couple of blogs, and it's one of our most important, requested, and significant stories that she's covered in her blog, she will attest to. Lots of comments on that I know I fielded. And it basically describes a town that was abandoned in the 1940s as a fishery.
I know this story.
Yeah. So a cannery that they tried to start there because the fish was very abundant. Weird things started happening. The cannery burned down twice. They tried to rebuild it. And finally, the locals said, that's enough. This place is cursed. It belongs to a local being they believe in native lore, Nantinak. They describe it as sort of a Bigfoot-like creature or Sasquatch-like creature. But as you talk to people, it can take certainly different forms, it seems, or have unseen, invisible powers. And one of them is that the locals will tell you, don't get near this. If you, you know, don't engage it, if you hear anything or get a sense of it or just get the feeling to leave, leave now. You don't want to draw its attention. You don't even want to be talking about it too much.
The fear zone.
The fear zone. So in the show, that happens where a couple of, at least two of the members there of the team, and they have some other people that come and help them out. One is a big game guide who just kind of comes up there and provides security a little bit. And I believe he got sick. One of the other guys on the team got sick. They had a psychic up there. They got sick. And you can say, like, okay, that's just your imagination running wild and you're anticipating that. You just feel nauseous. But yeah, you see a few people get genuinely sick visually on camera. And so there's also that feeling of fear or get out of here or just get out of the area. Certainly the two psychics and mediums they brought up there said, yeah, this is really bad news. I have to leave. And they had to leave the area. There is the same symptoms of a slightly differently described creature in that just odd phenomenon happens around this. It's not like just an escaped ape or an extent giant ape man out in the woods surviving. And again, is it the same thing? Because we're talking 70 years now that this thing started to basically close down the town and they traveled back there. You know, one of the points of the show, of course, other than entertainment, is to see if they could reopen Portlock because it's supposedly, you know, very good fishing. It would really help their community if they could take from the natural resources to help themselves. And the answer from Nantinak was no. I'm still around. Get out. This is not your area.
Yeah.
Not to give away too much, but it's pretty enthralling and there's a lot of weird stuff that happens and it's quite frightening. And I'll just give you this tidbit. They do get something on infrared FLIR video from a drone overhead that shows something large out in the woods. You know, it's giving off heat. So it has a heat signature walking out by itself. So if it's a person, they're out in the middle of nowhere where they just kind of suddenly show up on video and then just kind of go away. They kind of disappear. And from a high overhead vantage, what you can see are feet that are moving underneath it. You know, you can see something bipedal walking out in the middle of the woods at night, middle of the night by itself. Anyway, just a lot of strange stuff out in the Alaskan wilderness. And in this case, strange phenomenon, and it's not just a creature. So that's the lesson here, I believe, is that you could have a cryptid creature, but what comes with it is a lot of, what was the phrase, Scott? Unseen, immovable force?
Unknown, compelling
force. An unknown, compelling force, exactly. Yeah, so there's a lot of strange phenomena that goes with it, and this seems to be the case here, too, and death.
Yeah, and in terms of those additional things that happen that are outside the scope of just some biological entity that is misunderstood are the things like Christopher was saying with his phone, right? He got a new phone, didn't tell anyone the number, and he's still getting these weird calls with static sounds on him, which is straight out of Mothman. I can see why he was making connections there because he was also making connections to, or he quoted the movie when he said, you know, this thing, it depends who's looking at it, what it looks like, which is something that we've been talking about lately on the main show. And we talked about over Halloween in one of the Halloween stories about how this husband and wife, they both saw something super frightening, but completely different from each other. And it was in the same spot, but to one person, it looked like this. And then to the other who was right there, it looked like something else. That is always very fascinating to me because the fact that it's occupying geographical space indicates to me that there's a real presence there. But then the fact that it looks different to two people who are standing with each other indicates that there's also a component of your mind being messed with. and your personal perception.
Oh, yeah. It's in your head, and it's physical, but also spiritual and psychic
right.
and emotional
yeah.
and physiological in a way that it can control and manipulate you and certainly tries to get you to leave. And if you don't leave, there are consequences.
Well, there you have it, folks. From the Mothman to the Ichnaut, it seems these mysterious entities keep popping up across a lot of different cultures. Christopher's experience in Dillingham really makes you wonder about those unexplained lights over the Nishigak River and the strange cluster of deaths back in 2013. It's a reminder that whether it's Point Pleasant, Ohio, the Ural Mountains, or the remote towns of Alaska, things are not always what they seem. Pay attention to the signs around you. They aren't always obvious.
The Astonishing Dead Letter Office is hosted by Scott Philbrick and Forrest Burgess and is executive produced by Tess Feifel. The show is edited and mixed by Sarah Voorhees-Wendell at VW Sound. The theme is based on the Astonishing Legends theme by Judson Crane at Founder Music, arranged by Alan Caricia, who composes all the other music in the show. Tommy Beaver Design created the logo. The announcer is John Bolin. That's me. Stories are lightly edited for length, content, and readability, but otherwise presented as they're sent to us. We're always looking for more dead letters, so if you have a story of your own you'd like to share, email it to deadletteroffice@astonishinglegends.com. Please include how you would like to be credited. First name only, first name last initial, anonymous, a pseudonym. Let us know. Due to the number of emails coming in, we often cannot respond, but we do read them all. No part of the show may be reproduced anywhere without permission. Copyright Astonishing Legends Productions.